Well, I think we have all the board members that we are expecting this morning. I have 9 o'clock. We have a fairly lengthy agenda to get to, and one of our board members has a an appointment to get to at a certain point. So I think we're going to get started. Good morning, all. This meeting of the Board of Environmental Protection is being held by video conference via Zoom on September 17th, 2020, beginning at 9 a.m. I am Mark Draper, Chair of the Board of Environmental Protection, and also the Solid Waste Director for Aroostook Waste Solutions, and I reside in Caribou. At this time, I'll invite other board members to introduce themselves, beginning with Mr. Duchesne.
Thank you. I'm Bob Duchesne. I live in Hudson. I'm semi-retired.
Ms. Lessard.
I'm Sue Lessard, and I'm the town manager for the town of Bucksport, and I reside in Bucksport.
Mr. Parker.
Good morning. I'm retired from several things right now. I'm living down on the coast in Millbridge, and I'll be back in VZ for the winter.
Mr. Sanford.
Rob Sanford. I'm an environmental science professor from Gorham, Maine.
And last but certainly not least, Mr. Pelletier.
Good morning, all. Steve Pelletier, semi-retired forester, wildlife biologist, Topsom, Maine. Thanks.
Thank you. Others present include the Acting Commissioner Melanie Loisem, the Board's Executive Analyst Cindy Bertacci, and the Board's Administrative Assistant Ruth Ann Burke, and Assistant Attorney General Kate Tierney is advising the Board today. This meeting is being conducted by video conference due to the COVID-19 public health emergency as authorized by Public Law 2019, Chapter 617. Notice of the meeting and meeting materials are posted on the board's webpage. We are making an audio recording of this meeting. To eliminate background noise and to help ensure a clear recording, please mute your microphone when not speaking. And to allow the board members and staff to clearly see each other during the meeting, everyone except board members, DEP, and board staff, counsel to the board, and the persons participating in the agenda item under discussion is please asked to turn off their video from your computer. You will still be able to see and hear the meeting. This will simply turn off the picture of you. Immediately following our regular agenda items, the board will be holding a public hearing on a citizen petition to amend Chapter 400 of the Maine Solid Waste Management Rules. That hearing is scheduled to begin at 10 a.m. Because it's scheduled for 10 a.m. and been advertised as such, we cannot begin before 10 a.m. And we'll do our best to try to begin at 10 a.m., but there is a possibility it may be a little bit later. And we'll do our best to follow that schedule. We'll begin this morning with any comments from the acting commissioner.
Good morning. I have several things I wanted to make note of for the board this morning. I believe you've all received notice that we selected a new executive analyst to help Cindy with her transition and to provide some assistance for the next few weeks. That'll be Bill Hinkle. He has many years of experience, both previously at the department as well as at the Land Use Planning Commission. So we'll be excited to have Bill start working with all of us beginning on Monday next week. I believe former Commissioner Reed had noted for you some of the budget submissions that we've been working on. We have put in a proposal for fiscal year 21. And we'll have our biennial budget package due to the governor's office in mid-October. There, as you've seen in the media, there was a request for agencies to provide recommendations for a 10% curtailment. And so our approach, we're fortunate that we believe we'll be able to meet that request by freezing some of our vacancies. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to have some flexibility in how we manage those vacancies. So as there's some turnover in the department, as more retirements occur, we'd like to be able to shift our resources as we need to keep all of our programs operating. And then the last thing I would note is just the ongoing work of the Climate Council. There were two meetings that occurred this month. The second one was yesterday. The council has received all the recommendations from the working groups and is now consolidating those recommendations, establishing priorities, and will be generating a draft plan for the state for action on climate change that will be available in mid to late November. So for any of you who are interested in following that, you may want to take a look at that draft plan when it comes out. As fair warning, the statute does require that the department adopt rules to ensure compliance with the emission reduction targets by July 2021. So you won't be able to just watch this from the sidelines for much longer. We'll need to start working on this all together here in the months to come. And that's it for me.
Okay, any questions for the acting commissioner? Seeing none, the only comment I have, and really is just to echo her comments. Again, very excited to have Bill Hinkle joining us as the new executive analyst. And you know, very thankful that Cindy is willing to stay on for us and help us with that transition. So, that's exciting news as we make that transition. So next item on our agenda. Well, Ashley, I'm sorry. Cindy, any comments from you this morning?
Just briefly, I wanted to let the board know that with respect to the Nordic proceeding, the comments on the draft MIPTE's waste discharge license recommendation are in, and we'll be organizing that material and getting it up on the board's webpage. And with respect to our schedule going forward, we are scheduled to meet on October 1st. At this point, there are just several consent agenda items for related to consent agreements that need to be dealt with. So it should be a brief meeting, but it is important to move those consent agreements along. So we will meet at least for a brief meeting on October 1st. And that's it for now.
All right. So moving into our regular agenda items, the first item on the agenda is to approve the BEP meeting minutes of August 20th, 2020. Do I have a motion to do so?
I move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Deshane, second by Mr. Parker. Any discussion? Seeing none, call for a vote. Mr. Deshane?
Yes.
Ms. Lessard?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Sanford?
Yes.
And Mr. Pelletier?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries. And I vote yes as well. Always forget to do that. The next item on the agenda is an administrative consent agreement with Derek and Brenda Marcoux, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, from the town of Wells. And we have Mark Stebbins from the department to make a presentation to us this morning. The floor is yours, Mr. Stebbins.
Good morning, Chairman Draper, members of the board, Acting Commissioner Lozine. My name is Mark Stebbins, and I'm the Land Division Director. Before I summarize the case with you, I just want to acknowledge a few staff that have been involved in this case. Lucian Langua, Allison Searoys, Ron Mungin, and Steve Dickinson from the Maine Geological Survey. The Marcoux are owners of property at 325 Island Beach Road in the town of Wells. In December of 2017, the department issued a Natural Resources Protection Act permit, specifically a sand dune permit, for the construction of a residential home, driveway, deck, and patio, all within the frontal dune system. In March of 2019 and June of 2019, the department staff inspected this property, and we observed a granite beam, granite steps, edging, fill, an outdoor grilling, patios, all located within the frontal dune. And all those variations were not approved in the original permit by the department. That's the alleged violation, would be a violation of the Natural Resources Protection Act, Coastal Sand Dune Rules. The proposed consent agreement has a monetary penalty of $17,500, which has been paid. Part of the corrective measures outlined in the consent agreement would be to submit an after-the-fact NRPA permit, specifically a permit by rule, to convert the existing granite beam structure into what we call a cobble trap and fence. There is, if they cannot convert that, then there is the requirement for a restoration plan to remove the beam and then to submit as-built plans. We recommend that the board approve this consent agreement. And if you have any questions, I'd be more than glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Stebbins from the board?
Quick question.
Sure, go ahead, Mr. Pelletier.
Thanks, Mark. I understand there's some work to be done out there, so I'm assuming the contractor is going to be involved with that. Is there any other, this is a consent agreement for the landowner, but is there anything about the contractor that needs to be addressed?
That's a great question. We do, this is the consent agreement for the actual homeowner, and we have a pending consent agreement with the actual builder that did the work at the property. That's still pending.
Sue, did you have a question?
I did. If they had applied for what you're now going to allow them to have as a result of what's been done, et cetera, would what the result is going to be have been permitted by the department, or would some parts of it not have been permitted?
That's a great question. As far as what's been built out there, there are exemptions in state statute that allowed the structure to be built larger than what the actual permit that we issued by the department. It allows structures to be built on existing impervious areas. This whole parcel, which is about 17,000 square feet, was pretty much developed. So the house that was ultimately built was much larger than the original permit issued by the department, and that was because of the statutory exemptions.
I guess maybe I didn't phrase it correctly. The things that they did that weren't permitted by the department in their application that are going to remain.
Okay, we had some structures. Some structures have already been removed. Some structures are being made smaller as required by the consent agreement. Those things that were not approved and cannot be approved have been removed. Some of the perpendicular granite beams, some of the other structures in that frontal dune system has already been removed by the homeowner.
Okay, thank you. It's always, at least to me, important that these kind of violations don't end up being a way to write a check to get what you want instead of getting permission to do what you should have done in the first place. And so if what results from this consent agreement is that what is on the ground would have been permitted had they applied for it in the first place, then I'm good with this.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Mr. Shane. Sure.
Yes, thanks. I looked at this on Google Earth, so I kind of have some idea what it looks like and where it is. But I note that just about every time there's been an issue about something in the coastal dunes, for the last 15 years that I've been involved in the issue, it's wells. It's always wells. It's mostly often Drake Island. That particular little piece of Maine generates all the issues. Is there any working relationship between the department and the town? How to prevent some of this problem from going forward?
Actually, in this case, the town was involved in some of the actions at the property because there were violations of the Town of Wells local ordinance. And we worked, our field staff worked very well in coordination with the CEOs from the Town of Wells. So in this case, we worked pretty much hand in hand.
Great, because whenever I think about climate change and ocean level rising, I look at the map and say, okay, Wells is the first one to go. So I'm glad we're having these discussions.
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions from the board?
Mark, I approve the consent order.
You're making a motion. Okay. Is there a second to that? Second by Mr. Deshane. I got it by Mr. Deshane first. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we will call for a vote. Mr. Deshane.
Yes.
Ms. Lessard.
Yes.
Mr. Parker.
Yes.
Mr. Sanford.
Yes.
And Mr. Pelletier.
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. I guess I should have, and I didn't, I apologize before we went to that step. Is either Mr. or Mrs. Marcoux or any representative on the call today that wanted to address the board? I apologize if we skipped that step and they are here.
This is Juliet Brown, counsel for the Marcoux. I am here, but I don't need to say anything further. Thank you.
All right. I apologize for that. That was an inadvertent. So
no worries.
All right. Okay, so right along, item number three on our agenda is a commercial hazardous waste storage facility license renewal for the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. We will have a staff presentation, and I believe Ms. Sherry Plummer is making that presentation.
Yes, that's right. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Sherry Plummer. I work in the hazardous waste
management. The floor is yours.
Is my sound okay?
It's okay.
Portsmouth Naval Shipyard has had a hazardous waste storage facility license from the department since August of 1980. In 1994, the department granted the shipyard a license to construct a new building for its hazardous waste storage activities, or building 357. In 2001, the license was modified to allow the shipyard to accept hazardous waste from other Department of Defense facilities and became a commercial hazardous waste storage facility. Since then, the department has renewed the commercial storage facility license two times. This renewal does not have the shipyard making any major changes to the facility, its operation, or the types of waste handled and stored at the facility. The renewal includes the standard license conditions plus some additional conditions. The new conditions include changes to the groundwater monitoring plan and a plan to address water getting into the building. At your July 16th meeting, the board decided to post the draft license renewal for a 45-day public comment period prior to this final action, as required by Maine rules. Public notice was sent to the town of Kittery and the shipyard on July 20th. It was published in the Portsmouth Herald newspaper on July 24th. The public notice period ended September 7th without receiving any comments regarding the license. We did include two figures for your information this time. We've got a site map of CV Island and a drawing of building 357 because there were some questions last time. The only changes made to the license since the July meeting was we added a paragraph on page 37 of the board packet, or 19 on the license, that describes the public notice of draft order. We corrected a couple of minor typos, and we noted that the order is final. The department is requesting the board to finalize the license today.
Thank you. And any questions from the board members? I see none. Is there anyone? Oh,
I have a quick question.
I'm sorry.
This is Rob Sanford. On page, 21 of our packet, what is the use of the outdoor storage area now? That one that had the 357 outside building 357. that had the 9,000 gallon chemical tanks.
It's still an active part of the facility. They're allowed to have roll-off containers there. It's where the traffic flows through, and they do use it for some other types of storage.
Is there a berm in that outdoor storage area?
A container? Yes, there is a control for groundwater, and there's a berm surrounding the whole outside of the area.
Awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, seeing none, I will ask, is there anybody representing Portsmouth Naval Shipyard that would like to speak?
This is Robert Burley, and I have Joe Griffin with me. We're representing Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. All we'd like to say is we support the license as written.
Okay, thank you. So we will move on to board deliberation. I believe a motion is in order.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Ms. Lessard, second by Mr. Pelletier. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll move for a vote. Mr. DeShane?
Yes.
Ms. Lessard?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Sanford?
Yes.
Mr. Pelletier?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. Unanimous. Okay. Moving on to item four on our agenda, which is an appeal of by Sheldon Hartstone doing business as Fairmont Redemption. This is a revised draft order. And I believe we begin this process with Cindy giving us an introduction, please.
Okay. This agenda item begins on page 81 of your board packet. And this is an appeal by Sheldon Hartstone, doing business as Fairmont Redemption, of the department's denial of his application for a new beverage container redemption center to be located on Hammond Street in Bangor. The board heard oral argument on this appeal at its June 18th meeting. And following that oral argument and board deliberations, the board directed staff to draft an order for its consideration here today that would grant the appeal. The revised order, as well as the initial staff recommendation, are included in your packet. The procedural options available to the board this morning are as follows. If the revised order reflects the board's position, the board would vote to grant the appeal and adopt the revised order as presented, or with some minor changes, if you would like to make any minor changes to it. Alternatively, if the board does not feel that it wants to grant the appeal, it still retains the option of adopting the initial staff recommendation, which denied the appeal. So in essence, until the board has in front of it an order which reflects its thinking, there is not a final vote of the board. So Mr. Ranjan of the Office of the Commissioner is here to review the revised order with board members this morning and to answer any questions you may have. And I will note that Mr. Hartstone is also represented by counsel, who I believe is attending the meeting this morning. Yes, Mr. McKinley is on.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mungin, the floor is yours.
Good morning. This is Ron Mungin. I'm the enforcement specialist for the department. I just wanted to provide a little bit of a refresher on the program history and the procedural history of this matter, and then present the draft order as requested by the board. The beverage container redemption program, as we know, was established in 1978 as a litter control measure. In 2009, while the program was administered by the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, the legislature created additional criteria for licensing, which included considerations of the proximity of the proposed redemption centers to existing redemption centers, potential impact on existing redemption centers and the proposed hours of operation between the proposed and existing redemption centers. They also implemented the limitation on the number of redemption centers per municipality based on population size, and provided the exception that if the applicant demonstrates a compelling public need for an additional redemption center in that municipality, we can ignore the subsection 3, which is the limitations. In 2015, the Maine legislature transferred the administration of the program from the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, Forestry to the DEP. As part of that bill transferring responsibilities to the DEP, the language was maintained in statute, which limited the number of redemption centers that the department may license to 5 redemption centers in a municipality with population over 30,000. Which also included the exception that the department may grant a license that is inconsistent with the requirements set out in subsection 3 only if the applicant has demonstrated a compelling public need for an additional redemption center in the municipality. In 2019, the Maine legislature both increased the handling fee for redemption centers that they could charge the initiator deposit, and issued a moratorium on any additional beverage container redemption centers not previously issued prior to May 1st, 2019. I believe that expired January of this year. Additionally, the legislature also required the department to contact initiators of deposit who are part of commingling agreements to provide the numbers of beverage containers that were being collected and provide that to the department so the department can review the data and assess the efficiency and convenience of the current redemption system and develop a report providing recommendations to the legislature. Based on the arguments that made at the legislature and the plain language of the sections above, it would appear that there was a concern that there are too many redemption centers for the number of returnable containers, and that that may make the financial viability of redemption centers at risk, thus requiring a moratorium and an increase in handling fees. As for this matter, procedural history, January 21st, 2020, Mr. Sheldon Hartstone, doing business as Fairmount Redemption, submitted an application for a beverage container redemption center proposed to be located at 569 Hammond Street in Bangor, Maine. The department reviewed the application and determined that the city of Bangor already had more licensed redemption centers than was allowed under 38 MRS section 3113. The department also determined that Mr. Hartstone did not provide as part of his application a compelling public need for an additional redemption center in the municipality. On February 5th, 2020, the department issued an order denying Mr. Hartstone's application. On March 3rd, 2020, Mr. Hartstone made a timely appeal to the board of that decision and requested that the board grant his appeal and reverse the decision of the department denying the application. As part of the appeal, Mr. Hartstone neither requested to supplement the record nor did the board approve the admission of additional evidence to the record as part of the appeal. On June 18th, 2020, the board heard Mr. Hartstone's appeal, which consisted of the application department's order denying Mr. Hartstone's application, Mr. Hartstone's appeal, a map that included all but one existing redemption center currently licensed in relation to Mr. Hartstone's proposed redemption center, as well as 98 signatures supporting Mr. Hartstone's application. So after the board heard Mr. Hartstone's appeal, the record included those things that I have mentioned. The board voted to request the department draft an order based on the evidence in the record at that time, and that would grant Mr. Hartstone's appeal and reverse the department's denial of the application. And as such, the department has drafted such an order and presents it to you.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Mungin from the board members?
Quick one, Mr. Chair.
Sure, go ahead, Mr. Pelletier, and then Ms. Lessard.
Thanks, Ron, for that. The findings, you know, reference the fact that the department found that there was a number of centers out there, and And it talks about the reasons why the appeal, the denial first went there, but it really doesn't talk about the board's discussion that later came on I think we kind of in depth, we're looking at some of the characteristics of the different centers that were out there. And so my concern is that, do we have an opportunity here to provide some reasoning behind why the board came to that, so that in the future that there's some better understanding, if you want to call it guidance, that from the board as to why this appeal was something that we looked at favorably. I guess it just seems like what's written here is kind of explaining what happened, but it doesn't give any future readers an opportunity to understand why there might have been other considerations here.
The staff drafted the order based on the record that was before the board and the evidence that was before the board. We tried not to include anything that was outside the evidence of the record. The discussion about the types of redemption centers, we can include what the types are. However, the question then would be in what relation would that come to the compelling public need? And so we would need additional information on what to include for that to make that decision.
Some of those redemption centers, frankly, weren't providing the hours or providing the quality of services that were, that were being offered by the appellant. So that's where it was. Is there, is five in a city, when particularly you've got something like Bangor versus Brewer versus, there was, again, quite a bit of discussion about the local area and the region and how those areas, I guess my point is that this was not just a willy-nilly appeal decision by the board. And so that's my only point.
I mean, I could ask Scott Wilson if he would like to comment on the types of redemption centers. As far as I understand, based on the record, the only information about the hours that were actually open was just alleged in the actual comments. There was no evidence presented. There was no supplemental evidence presented to the record that actually demonstrated that the other redemption centers weren't open, nor was there supplemental evidence towards the demographics setup of the town or the potential issues that might be for a drivable community, walking community, things like that. So I tried, when staff drafted the order, we tried to limit it to what was actually in the record at the time.
Melissa Sarr.
Did someone else speak?
No, I think the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
I would concur with Mr. Pelletier, and while I am, don't want to hold up Mr. Hartstone's application any further, I am disappointed that the board spent a lot of time on this discussion, and it is in no way reflected in the findings section of this. And if all that's reflected in the findings section is what the department is statutory in nature, then the board's process isn't reflected at all. And I can understand concern over others applying, et cetera, but I think that it's more inclined to be vulnerable if there's no explanation of what the board's considerations were than if there are, because as it reads now, it especially with highlighted language and no discussion of what the board talked about. It just seems capricious in nature, and it, at least from my point of view, was not a capricious discussion or a capricious decision.
Shane.
Yes, thank you. Since we apparently aren't asking questions and we're into discussion, can I go ahead?
Go right ahead, sir.
I think, first of all, I think I would like to offer that the law worked as written. I think the department reached a reasonable conclusion, and based on the evidence afterwards and what was in the record, reached a conclusion that was supportable by law. I think the board took the same facts that were in the record, including the layout of Bangor, the hours of operation for some of these facilities. The fact that one facility used to exist when these permits were issued originally and disappeared and went out of business. In fact, we were only returning to what was historically there, was a good reason for the board to reach its decision. So there's two parts here, both in statute. One is the department reached the right conclusion based on the evidence and on the law. The board, with its discretion, could look at the evidence with fresh eyes and say, no, we find these facts a little bit different. We're going to reach a different conclusion, but thank you for your work. I would agree. I would like to see a little more of that documentation in this particular order. But for me personally, it doesn't have to be there to reach the conclusion that we were authorized to reach by law. And I think it's quite supportable.
Thank you.
Am I?
Yes, Mr. Parker, go ahead.
I agree with both of the last two speakers, okay? First of all, I think there should be more discussion there of what the board actually determined its position on. But also, I don't think we should hold this up to try to do anything in addition to that. I think the board made a decision based on the facts before it. I look at the current board order as maybe being a little bit defensive. We weren't attacking the department. We were just disagreeing with that position. And that's the option that the board has. So I agree with both what Sue said and what Bob said.
Yeah. I think at this point, before we go further, unless there's actual questions for Mr. Mungin, I would be interested to hear from Mr. Hartstone or his representative as to, you know, where they are in the any thoughts they had on the proposed draft.
Sure. Thank you. This is Attorney Bill McKinley on behalf of the applicant. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members and acting commissioner and staff. I've listened very carefully to what all the board members have said. I can't really disagree with anything that any of them said. I was a little surprised, as was my client, as to the lack of detail in the proposed order. I thought that the board had been pretty clear to staff back in June as to the issues and the information that it relied upon in directing the drafting of that order. I thought there was a lot of specificity provided. I think Mr. Deschaine has outlined pretty carefully, I think, what the major factors were. I thought the staff was directed to include those. I was surprised that they were not included. But on behalf of my client, we are pretty interested in moving ahead, if we can, to a formal resolution of this. You know, we are apprehensive that any major redrafting might precipitate a significant additional delay. You know, if we could find a way to take care of the considerations that the board thought were going to be reflected in the order, and to do that in a quick fashion, I think that would probably, make sense from everyone's perspective. So again, to summarize, we do feel that the board had been clear regarding what it expected to be in there. We expected it to be in there. We don't see it. His major consideration, Mr. Hartstone, obviously, is that he get the license. But I do understand the importance of documentation and precedent for your organization going forward. And if there's a need to supplement and to change the existing proposal to reflect these issues, we just ask and hope that it can be done in a very expeditious fashion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McKinley. Any questions for Mr. McKinley from the board members? Okay, seeing none, We're back to where we were a few minutes ago. We're deliberating. So I guess my question is, you know, I think several board members, and I would tend to agree with what other board members have stated, and I would agree with Mr. McKinley, have noted that there's a desire to see additional detail as to what the board's reasoning was when it reached its conclusion to grant the appeal. The question then becomes, in order to do that, we would have to change the order, or the order would have to be revised, and that's going to take some period of time. Do we have any, can we get any type of guidance as to, from staff, as to how long that might take? Are we talking, okay, we could perhaps deal with this at the October 1st meeting and try to reach a conclusion that that works for the board and also works for the applicant? Do we have any sense of that, of how long that process might take? And I'm not sure who to ask that question of. I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't see Scott Wilson on the call. I know he was previously. I can partially answer it, I guess. We would need additional direction from the board. While I understand that there's a concern about the lack of considerations or evidence within the order, the order was drafted consistent with Chapter 2, only including that information that was on the record and available for the board for its consideration at the time of its order. Or its vote. And so any additional information we would need to make sure actually was in the record and available before the board to be properly considered. We would just need more information on what specifically to include in that order.
Mark, it's Jim when I get a chance.
Go ahead, Jim, and then Mr. Pelletier.
I don't think we should hold Mr. Hartstone up any longer. I think we've gone far enough. I think the point we've made is that if this occurs again on some other issue, we'd like the department to be a little more thorough in what it brings back to us. I think we're comfortable working. I'm comfortable working with what we have right now. It'd be nice to have a little more definition. However, in order to get more definition, we're going to hold up Mr. Hartstone for another month or two, whatever time it takes. So I really think I'm comfortable with this, and I think we've given the department somewhat of a direction as to what to do in the event of another occurrence like this. Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Pelletier, and then Mr. DeShane.
I concur with Jim that I don't want to hold this up, and you know, there's discussions been had. In the future, though, the types of characteristics that we might want to mention would be, you know, the regional proximity of other towns and the ability of what's going on in this instance in Brewer, for instance, the ability for each one of those centers to actually handle, you know, the walking public, the driving public, the number of bottles, the hours. So there were some fairly specific conditions that we talked about in this instance. So in the future, that's the kind of stuff. And again, it's just an opportunity, so we don't have to keep revisiting these things if and when it comes up again. So, but I'm ready to move forward. Thanks.
Mr. DeShane.
Thank you. Yes, I'm ready to move forward as well.
Mr. DeShane.
Yes. Believe I am on. I'm you ready are. To go forward too. As I said earlier, I think the law was followed on both parties, on both the departments and the board's point of view. And I think I don't need anything more in the record. I think basically if there's any fault here, it's the legislature, but I always think that. The way the bottle bill is actually written, it's pretty black and white, 5 within a municipality, and then you get some discretion after that. There really isn't anything in the law that I'm familiar with that looks at the adjacent town, looks at the size of operations. You either have a permit or you don't, and you get up to 5 in that town. Some of that is one of the reasons I think it was left a little bit of discretionary for the board to be able to weigh these facts. I personally don't feel any of that needs to be in this record. I think the department did a good job. I think when this issue comes back again, the department will make its recommendations based on the law, and the board will look again based on what's in the record and the testimony of the hearing, and decide whether that decision is correct or not. But I'm ready to go forward.
Ms. Lessard, go ahead.
The only thing I would ask is that on page 85 only be not highlighted.
Okay.
That's a minor enough change, I would think, that it wouldn't require going back to anywhere.
No, I guess my sense would be that we could approve the order as amended with that minor amendment. Would that be in the form of a motion?
Yes.
Okay, so there's been a motion to approve the order as amended, seconded by Mr. Deschaine. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I will call for a vote. Mr. Deschaine?
Yes.
Ms. Lessard?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Sanford?
Aye.
And Mr. Pelletier?
Yes.
Mr. Pelletier?
Yes.
And I vote, yep. I vote yes as well. Folks, I'm going to announce here that I am still struggling with internet. I'm about 5 seconds behind everybody here. So bear with me. It's been a constant struggle no matter where I am. So doing the best I can here. So with that, and again, I voted yes. So that was a unanimous approval. So with that, I believe we can close the regular meeting. We cannot open the public hearing until 10 a.m., which is approximately 14 minutes from now. So would someone care to make a motion to adjourn the regular meeting?
So move.
Yep.
Second.
All in favor. I am going to sign off for just a minute and see if I can, in between now and the public hearing, see if I can do something about internet access and try to stay caught up here. So if I disappear for a few minutes, that's what's going on.
Thank you.